My name is Willis Choate. I live in Marietta, Oklahoma. Now, we publish a small weekly newspaper, spelled W-E-E-K-L-Y, not W-E-A-K-L-Y. Okay? A town of 2,500. My family has been in this same business since 1897. I'm the third generation publisher of that newspaper. We also are in the cattle business and do a couple of other things. In addition to that, we try to take an active role in our local church, and then we have a ministry outside of our community. One of the other things I do is I train counselors for the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association and also for a nationally known denominational evangelist, and sometimes I do that once or twice a year. So that's basically what I do. I have two sons. One is 31 years old and not married, and he lives in Denton. And I have another son who is 26 years old and is a commodities futures broker. He has his own business, and he trades futures by computer on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. We used to be in the oil business, and we decided we'd get into something a little bit more risky. So that's basically what we do. I think for the sake of what we're trying to do today, I want you to take and look at your handout, and I am, in the interest of time, I am going to follow this very loosely. We'll play fill in the blank a little bit to keep you awake, because after all, this is right after lunch, and you're overly full, and I can't get the temperature down to 60 in here. But we'll follow this pretty closely. Let's play fill in the blank a little bit, and then you will notice that there are a number of scriptures listed for some of these points, and I may not cover the scripture. I do that intentionally, and we put it in there so that if you're really interested in that, you can go back, look up the scriptures, fill it in, and we can use our time at the end maybe doing some application type things rather than use all of our time the other way. Why don't you open your Bibles with me to 1 Corinthians 10, 24 through 27. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to break this down into three areas. The first will be goals. The second has to do with priorities. And the third area of this basic outline is how we use our time. Now, if we're going to get a handle on things, if we're going to get control, the first thing is that we must have goals. Sometimes people use the word objectives. Whichever word fits you best is fine. Then you must set your priorities based on your goals. Now that is, what I said there is very simple. It's pretty profound. You think about that a second. Set your goals first and then determine priority based on your goals. The priority has to do with time. And then you determine how to allocate your time to it. Now, what we're doing is that the first thing in our process of trying to get a control of our life has to do with goals. And the reason that I bring that up is that most of the time, most of us don't have any real clear-cut goals in the Christian life. If I ask you to stand, if you had a written Christian goal, unless you're an exceptional group, there won't be many people standing. And I see you nodding and saying, yes, uh-huh. I think you probably fit in that category. So what I'm going to talk about first is I'm going to share with you my goals in life. And I'm going to talk about goals. Then we will talk about making allocation of our time based on those goals. And we will sort of cover it. To set the background, just to set the premise, let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 24 through 25, and like good kiddies, you all play fill in the blank, okay? See, this keeps you in the game, I hope. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. And everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore, I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I buffet my body and make it my slave, lest possibly after I have preached to others, I myself should be disqualified. Let's go back and fill in the blanks. Verse 24. Run in such a way that you may win. Run, win. Exercise self-control in all things. Not without aim, but I buffet my body. Now, interestingly, in the original language, the word buffet meant literally beat it black and blue to bring it into submission. If you wish, we're talking about administering to our body that knockout blow that will bring it into submission. And then when we come down to the next verse, it says, lest I myself be disqualified, fail to reach the goal. That has nothing to do with salvation. Some people trip over that. It has to do with not reaching our goal. Now, the first hurdle for all of us is to decide, and I think that's probably where most of you are, based on what you said before we started. The biggest hurdle is to decide, are you going to be a God pleaser or a man pleaser? And I'll tell you, that's tough. And it all comes down to who is the life audience? Who is the audience you play your life for? Are you more interested in pleasing God or pleasing man? Incidentally, later on, I'll try to remember to share with you a principle that a guy one time, and it was a long time ago, paid $25,000 for voluntarily. And it's a principle that I apply in my own life today based on this, having to do this preparation for this several years ago to do this workshop. Well, the first thing we've got to do is we've got to decide, what do you really want out of life? That's really the base thing. What do you really want out of life? A goal is a terminal point in a race, an end towards which effort is exerted. Bill Glass and Jim McEachern, or James McEachern, in a book called Plan to Win, use a interesting little thing, then he said, and it's called picturing. He says that they write that we should picture ourselves reaching our goal. Let me use an absurd illustration. I have a son who has a particular affection for Porsches. Some of you guys, can you nod to that? Yeah, that's not bad, is it? Interestingly enough, whenever I have, now this happened 5 or 6 years ago when he was a little bit younger. When we talked about it, I think that whenever he thought about a Porsche, he pictured himself sitting behind the wheel of a red one with a blonde. And I'm not talking about the seat covers. Now, that guy had in his mind a goal of having a Porsche and the blonde. Since then, he's had the Porsche and 5 blondes, but we won't go into that. He's the one that's 32 years old or 31 years old and not married. But I think the point is that we should picture ourselves as winners as reaching our goal. And a part of attaining that goal is to be able to see it. You see, the Christian believing is seeing. For the world, seeing is believing, and there's a big difference. Our goals ought to be both general and specific. Now, that's where we probably will get kind of turned around a little bit, where we'll have a little bit of turmoil, is when we get down. We can make the general goals very easily. We come down to the specifics, and we have a problem. Let me illustrate it very quickly. A jogger. Now, I happened to be on the 12th floor of a hotel this morning, and just at daylight, I looked out in the parking lot, and here's this guy going round and around and around jogging. Now, his general goal if I know anything about a jogger, was one of good health. Now, I would almost guarantee you that his general goal was good health. I used to do that some, and I was doing it to keep my weight down, trying to keep my pulse rate down. Now, my specific goal, and this is sort of abstract, but I think it'll illustrate the point. My specific goal was how much distance I can cover in 12 minutes. Because if I didn't have that specific goal of covering a certain amount of distance in 12 minutes, then I had a tendency to go out there and lose the intensity that I needed to reach the goal of having better health. That's what I'm talking about. The two types of goals. Okay, getting started. Like I said, a goal is an objective or something we reach toward. Our goals always determine the outcome of our lives. Now, in some instances, maybe they don't. But let me give you an illustration. For one thing is, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. In April of 1985, I was driving down the interstate. I live just north of Dallas, across into Oklahoma. And I was driving to Dallas to catch a plane to go to Hartford, Connecticut, to present this very workshop for the first time. Now, let me tell you, folks, trying out a workshop at Hartford, Connecticut on the road is tough. And I was by myself and praying about it, going down the interstate, and it was dark. And it came on the radio, something that has been indelibly impressed upon me ever since. Denny McLean, in my era, when I was a young man, was at the pinnacle of success. He was a Cy Young Award-winning pitcher. I mean, he was something special. And that morning, as I was driving down the interstate, the news commentator reported that Denny McLean had just the day before been sentenced to 23 years in the federal penitentiary on a drug charge. And in fact, it was drug and racketeering. And they quoted Denny McLean as saying something I thought was extremely interesting. He said, "I don't know how you get to where I am today from where I was 17 years ago. I don't know how you get to where I am today from where I was 17 years ago." Denny McLean had 17 years earlier been at the pinnacle, on the front page, throw the ball over the plate every time, worshipped in a sense by a lot of young guys. 17 years later, he is going to the federal penitentiary, and he did, in fact, go. Interestingly enough, he got back out to get a new trial and then pled guilty again and went back again, I think. I didn't understand that, but that's what happened. But interestingly, he said, "I don't know how you get to where I am today from where I was 17 years ago." You don't want to get into a situation where you look back 20 years from today and you don't know how you got there. Back to the statement. If you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. Okay, let's talk about goals. I'm going to give you four types of goals. And I'm going to take a chance and hope you all won't judge me, and I'm going to share mine with you, okay? And please don't laugh at how silly they may be. That really destroys somebody trying to do a workshop. Particularly when you guys won't laugh at what you're supposed to. Okay, we're going to break it down into overall life goals, long-range goals, immediate goals, and short-range goals. And I'm going to start at the bottom and work to the top. Let's start with a short-range goal. My short-range goal for this year: read 4 new books. I'm behind. Lead a couple's Bible study. We're working on it. Continue to mature in the Word. I'm working on it. Short range goal. Legitimate? Yeah, it's free as for me. I don't know what yours ought to be. I can't write yours for you. Intermediate goal. Interestingly, I rewrote this in May. My intermediate goal I rewrote in May. I had used the same one for 2 or 3 years and had worked with it and found in May I had to rewrite it. My 1 to 5 year goal is to identify and invest time in men who are capable of impacting their sphere of influence. That's a change for me. And what happened was I realized that God was leading me into a different area of the ministry, and I needed to rewrite my goals. Let me say it again. To identify and invest time in men who are capable of impacting their sphere of influence. Now, what I'm saying is that I think that what God would have me do is to identify people who can impact their sphere of influence, and then I think I ought to invest some time in them. You see, the philosophy of this whole deal is to try to find people who want to be fat people. Faithful, available, and teachable. So that we can apply 2 Timothy 2:2. Somebody look up the verse for me. If you can, anybody here quote it? 2 Timothy 2:2. Look it up in a good translation.
NIV.
NIV is great. Try it. Get after it.
And the things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable men who will also be qualified to teach others.
Okay. Part of my goal is trying to identify those people who can multiply. See, that's a multiplication principle. And I think if we're going to win the world to Christ, it will not be addition by addition of adding 1 or 2 or 3 people to the church. It will be because we are multiplying the laborers. One other freebie I'll give you is I think if we're going to win the world, it will not be in the church, it will be in the marketplace. I think that the church was intended to equip the saints. That's the pastor's job, is to equip the saints. And whether you like it or not, you and I are the saints. And send us out into the marketplace so that people can be won to Christ. I think that's God's plan. And if we have a terrible tendency in the church today to hire a preacher to do the ministry. And he would never intended that. God never intended that. He intended him to be an equipper. And for us, the people in the pew, to be out in the marketplace carrying the message. See, we can't any longer drag people or entice people to come into the church. We've got to take the church, Jesus Christ, to them. And so that's part of what I'm doing is trying to find those guys that can, you know, infect, if you wish, their sphere of influence. My long-range goal to help develop laymen who are capable of sustaining the ministry in tough times, in a hostile environment. Those are the people who, if the situation should change in our world, would be able to continue to go on about their business and spreading the word. Let me give you an absurd example. I would like to be a part of helping equip people and developing lay people and myself at the same time. So that if you were lifted out of the Northwest Baptist Church this afternoon, you're picked right up and dropped in the middle of Africa or South America in the jungle. No notes, no commentaries, no Bible. Nothing but what you got on. So that in a week you'd have a Bible study started. You'd be leading it out of what you had stored in your heart and in your head. Now those are the people that will be able to handle the ministry in tough times. And that's what you and I ought to strive to be. And I pray it'll never happen. You see, we minister today in certainly not a hostile atmosphere. We don't know what a hostile atmosphere is as Christians. Enough of that. My life goal, to continually be striving to conform my life to the earthly example of Jesus, making a significant difference in the lives of those people with whom God allows me to come in contact. Let me do that one again. You don't have to write it down necessarily. That's just mine, and I'm sticking with it. This is the thing, whenever it's all over with, if I have done this, I'll be satisfied, and I hope God will be, and I believe He would be. To continually be striving to conform my life to the earthly example of Jesus, making a significant difference in the lives of those people with whom God allows me to come in contact. You think that's worthy? Yeah. I think it is for me. Okay, let's talk about real quickly, and I'm going to run through these pretty hurriedly. Let's talk about areas where we need to set goals. We're getting back down now a little bit more into the specifics. Personal goal. Let me give you an example. To lose 25 pounds. Now, hey, everybody look. Yeah, I need to lose 25 pounds. You know, that ought to wake you up. I am not going to tell which of you need to lose 25 pounds. Another personal goal would be to quit smoking. That just doesn't have to be one of my problems, but, you know, if that's yours, well, you maybe you ought to quit it. Another personal goal would be to become a disciple. Or to become more disciplined. How about that? Is that a worthy personal goal? I don't think I should have. I misspoke myself when I said disciple. I should have said more disciplined. A family goal. An example would be to teach our small children to be more caring and sharing. And pray that they'll be able to apply the Word of God to their lives. That's a family goal. Another goal would be to spend more time with our mate or with our children. And I want you to also, you might ought to remember, it's not the quantity, it's the quality of time. My life wasn't changed and I wasn't focused and I was terribly worldly whenever our first son was in at the formative years. My wife and I have been going together or married ever since she was 14 and I was 15 years old. Our oldest son was born the first day of my sophomore year at the University of Oklahoma. She and I have been raised together. We raised one another. Problem was that I was not in the things that I should have been as a young man. And I don't want to get into that but extensively. But what happened was that over the pursuit of the wrong things, mostly money and pleasure, I neglected my family and my wife. And so I have very strong feelings about that. I think we ought to spend time. Incidentally, there's a little book, and I didn't look to see if they had it out here, but it's called The One-Minute Manager. That's an excellent book. And it one of the principles out of The One-Minute Manager is catch them doing something right. And I want to just ask you, how much of your time do you spend trying to catch your kids doing something wrong? You supervise somebody at work, you spend all your time trying to catch somebody doing something wrong, don't you? The principle is that catch them doing something right and praise them. It's an excellent book. If you haven't read since it first came out, they have several adaptations of it. I think one of them is for parents now. I haven't seen it, but I understand that they do have it. Let's talk about a ministry goal. How, in the area of a ministry goal, how about reaching a neighbor for Christ? That'd be one, wouldn't it? Being a part of a home Bible study is another ministry goal. Job goal. I'm not even going to touch that. You know, if I ask you in the area, in those five areas that you see listed there, if I were to ask you in which of those areas you had a goal, I'll guarantee you that the vast majority of you will have it in the job area. I'm not even going to touch it. The fifth area is recreation. Now, let me share with you a couple of things about that. Most of us would not typically plan recreation, but it's very important. My father died when I was 13 years old, and I'm an only child. And frankly, I don't have many good memories of my childhood because of some things going on in our family. But I remember one time particularly whenever my father and my mother and I went out on the edge of what you would know as Lake Texoma. And my father dug a hole in the ground, put some rocks around it, and laid down a grate out of an old refrigerator or an old stove. And my mother cooked scrambled eggs, and she cut up little bits of onion and cheese and put in it. And we sat out there on the banks of what we call Thomas Creek. And ate. Isn't it interesting that that's a little thing? It didn't cost much money. It is the fondest memory I have of my family together. And I have to be careful or I'll tear up a little bit when I talk about it. You see, it isn't the quantity of time, it's the quality. And often it's the little things. And I'll tell you something else. It doesn't make a whole lot of difference the age of your children, continue to spend time with them. I think my kids at age 31 and 26 need me more today than they did whenever they were younger, because they look to their mother, men particularly, listen to me, they look to their mothers much more as they're in their younger years. But as you begin to get a little older, they look to dad. Can you see the scratch on my face right here? Can you see it? I got that Thursday afternoon horseback helping my youngest son gather some cattle in the brush. Now, I wasn't so interested in helping him gather cattle as I was trying to spend a little time with him. He needed help gathering the cattle, and I ride a horse. Well, I feel much more comfortable about anywhere than on a horse, because my body isn't suited to straddle a horse. In fact, my hand is so... I'm sore. We won't talk about all the areas I'm sore, but I'm sore in this hand and in this arm from grabbing hold of the saddle horn so bad every time that horse would break into a lope. You all never ride a horse, so you know what I'm talking about. Saddle horn is, well, I'm not going to go into that explaining that. I think the point is that you spend time in recreation with your kids and spend quality time. Okay, let's jump on over to the examples, talk about life's goals. The value of a written goal. First of all, they speak to commitment. I believe we're talking about on page 3. They speak to commitment. We ought to make them tough. Why would we have written goals? Why did I go to the trouble of writing down my goals? Well, for one thing, they keep us on course. We have a terrible tendency to stray. See, every time I give this workshop or every time I begin to stray, I go look up my goals again. And I read them to see if I'm going where I... And I've already given you my goals to see if what I'm doing fits my goals. The second thing is they provide us a yardstick of progress. You know, as you drive down the interstate, you see those mile markers clip by? Same idea. As we move down through life, we ought to use our goals to give us a check on our progress. See, we should be moving closer to our goals. They help us crystallize our thoughts and motivate us to action. That would be number 3. I don't know about you, but sometimes I need a clear thought. And sometimes I need motivation. Number 4, they provide us a reference and reminder of our objectives. We need them to stay. We need a constant reminder of what it is we're trying to do. 5th, a written plan conserves time and energy because at all times we know where we are or where you are and what you will be doing next. I have found in my own life that I spend a lot of my time just muddling along. You all understand muddling? Is that a rural term? You all understand muddling? You know, just kind of wandering along, you know. Number 6, we gain from life the exact reward we plan for and expect to get. First, we must make a decision to set goals. What do you really want out of life? Anybody have any questions about that? Did I go too fast for you to fill in the blanks? Number 4, references and reminders. And reminder, and a reminder. Excellent.
Anything about that?
No. Not in the sense that I think you're talking about. Measurable. Goals that you can actually measure something by.
Well, yeah.
Give us an example. Okay.
Well, you can say my goal is to be a good person. Well, how do you know?
Okay. Yeah.
But if my goal is to become a good person, and the goal would be to be kind to three people this week, whatever.
Super. That is in the area of the specific goal. We have the general goal, and then we get specific about how we're going to do that. That has to do with the how also. Good point, Rick. Thank you. Priority. What's the point of having goals if we don't use priority to reach them, if we don't set priority? The problem is that, the problem is that we too often do things somewhat unconsciously. We just drift through life. The priorities basically govern the when we do things. Goals without priority are meaningless. What value is there of having a goal if you don't give priority to those things that will allow you to reach the goal? Point? What value is it of having a goal? You know, we can, and this is in the area of what Rick's talking about. We could set a goal, but if we don't give priority to those activities that help us reach the goal, it's meaningless to set goals. It's just an exercise. It's just something we do. Now, if you were in John Crawford's workshop today, he touched upon this just a little bit. And let's talk about some areas where we need to set goals. And I am not going to tell you priority in this area. I'm going to give you an outline and let you think about it. Let's say that the four areas that we're going to talk about, first of all, is God, family, ministry, and job. Now, that's the areas. Before some of you guys got here, we talked about, I asked some questions of some of the early arrivers. Okay, those are basically where we have conflict in the use of our time. Is that not true? Well, really, the truth is, we will order those priorities, and I will give you an example, and I'll make a case for ordering those four in a certain way. But the truth of the matter is that we reshuffle that depending on what's going on. Basically, our first priority ought to be in the area of taking care of, in the area of what comes first, it should be our relationship with Jesus Christ. You see, if that is not right, the rest of it goes down the tube anyway. Right? Okay. So the first priority, if we're going to order things in priority, the first priority must be our relationship with Jesus Christ. Secondly, it is family, at least from my point of view. Most of you will not really argue with that, probably. See, God, family. Now let's talk about ministry or job. Now I can make a case for either one of those being third. I will take the tack that job should be third. Because if you're not taking care, and we're talking now to lay people, if you're not taking care of your job, then you probably cannot have an effective ministry because you can't make enough money to live. Okay? Then the fourth area, as far as the way I order it today, would be ministry. Incidentally, I have switched those in the last 2 years. I do not say that those are absolutes, by the way. I think that's something you've got to ferret out for yourself. You've got to work out for yourself. Incidentally, another thing is that you'll also find that your priorities change with your age and maturity. Now, I'm not talking about in those four general areas, but your priorities in general change. Remember, God is much more interested in what you are than what you accomplish. Y'all looked at me like, what did he say? God is much more interested in what you are than what you accomplish. You see, we think we have to accomplish certain things. God is more interested in what's going on inside. I don't know why it came to me, but I was in John Crawford's deal today about finishing well. And for some reason, just this minute, little old saying says, the faith that fizzles before the finish was flawed from the first. The faith that fizzles before the finish was flawed from the first. Meaning that we ought to be sure that we get everything tied down. And if we go over the, if we twist off, in my terminology, if we go over the hill spiritually, we weren't nailed down to the right things. We had our focus wrong. That's another freebie. I don't know where that came from. I believe Adrian Rogers may have said it first. Anyway, enough of that. Christianity is basically a relationship with God, and the quality of that relationship is reflected in our relationship with other people. Is that fair? See, Christianity is basically a relationship with God. The quality of that relationship is reflected in our relationships with other people. That's one of the things about witnessing. It ought to be that we are so filled with Jesus Christ that it just slops over on everybody around us. You don't like the term slops over, do you? That has to do with a bowl that is overfilled and it's running over the sides. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. That our cup is so filled. Our body, our lives are so filled with Jesus Christ. Every time he punches, it just oozes out. You know, that's what we're talking about. Okay, let's talk about the use of time. And I have skipped through a lot of material in a great big hurry trying to get over to some things we can do that I think maybe you'll find more interesting based on what you've said. What is time from the biblical perspective? Let's look at it from God's perspective. All time was created by God and it is given to us by Him. Now, when I was 19 or 20 or 21, I didn't realize how precious time was. I'm 51. It's become awfully precious. You see, I realize that I only have so many years left. And I've got to invest my time wisely. I think we ought to value it just like gold. Continually be planning about what we're going to do 5 years from now, but do something today. Another interesting thing about time is that we say all men are created equal. We say that? That's just not true. Some people are smarter than I am. The vast majority of the people are smarter than I am. Some guys are stronger than I am. I happen to play golf with an old boy that drives a golf ball 75 yards further than I do. Now, it's all from that right angles, but it's 75 yards further than I do. We're just not created equal. The one thing that we have in common is we all have the same amount of time. And, you know, it's interesting that God gives us just enough to do what He wants us to do. And I would imagine that that's part of the stump that most of you are bumping up to as you're plowing through life. See, God gives us just the right amount of time. It all depends on how we invest it. Now, frankly, we don't belong to ourselves. 1 Corinthians 4:2. In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that one be found worthy. We talk a lot about stewardship in the church today, but we're often talking about the investment of money. And God entrusts time to us just like He does money. And He wants us to invest it where it will provide the maximum return for Him. A principle of time. Life is brief. Okay, let's talk about some very practical things, at least from my point of view. General principle on the wise use of time. This is not in your notes. See, our biggest problem is trying to differentiate between what is urgent and what is important. Now, is that not the problem? Now, if that's a problem with you, nod, you know. Trying to determine what is important and differentiating between it and what is urgent. Now, it all comes back to is allocating our time to fit our goals and our priorities in life. Okay, two key words in prioritizing. You might want to write it down. One has to do with importance. That is related to our goals and objectives in life. Importance. The second has to do with urgency. That is related to time, and it concerns how soon something must be done. Now, listen to me closely. I'm going to say something I want you to think about. If an activity is very important and very urgent, it should have top priority, right? It fits our goals, and the time to do it is urgent. Warning, the natural tendency is to pay too much attention to the urgency and not enough attention to the importance. We can spend all of our time doing that what is urgent and never get around to what is really important and what will get us closer to our goal. That's the press that you feel. You younger guys in college, you are pushed by the urgent. Some of that you don't have a whole lot of control over because you didn't use your time well earlier on in the semester. I won't go into that because that's too convicting. If it is very urgent, but not at all important, give it low priority. Irregardless of how urgent it is to do something outside of getting that paper in, if it does not fit your goals, give it low priority. Now, let me give you some ways to check. And this is something also I believe that is not, well, I know it is not in your notes. Before making a commitment of your time, I want to give you some questions to ask. I have been applying this to my own life. Now, basically what I am doing here is I'm sharing with you some things that I apply to my own life. The first question I ask, is it a good idea? For example, I was asked to come to this conference and present this workshop. The first question that I have got to ask, and maybe I could pick a more absurd example, but the first question I've got to ask is it a good idea? Is this workshop at this conference a good idea? Obviously it was. The next question is, am I the person to do it? Now, this is applicable particularly in the area of making decisions in the area of Christian things. It's applicable anywhere, but I think it works well, particularly well in the area of ministry. Is it a good idea? Number one. Number two, am I the person to do it? You see, it can be a good idea, and you're just not the guy to do it. You know. How long will the opportunity last? That's another important question before you make a commitment of your time. You see, I know that this train's only coming through once, and I had to take it. I will not get another chance to speak to you folks again. So if it's a good idea, and I am the person to do it, then the next question I have to answer is, how long will the opportunity last? Well, it's one time. So there's an important factor to consider in deciding. Does it fit my goals? Yes, it fits my goals. You remember what I told you my goals were? To invest my time in people who could impact their sphere of influence? You guys are a select group of people. I know that before I ever come. I know that you're the elite. In a sense, that you're specially motivated and that you're worthy of my time. You see, there's some other things I could be doing. I had another ministry opportunity if I had wanted to take it. But I had rather be here because I knew what kind of people would be in this room. Incidentally, you know, you're not here by accident. You're here by divine appointment. Now, that ought to make you feel a little bit better about it. I know you're wondering what in the world God had for you. Put me in front, put that guy from Marietta, that country hick, up in front of us and have him talking to us, you know. But you were here by divine appointment. Even a blind hog could find an acre. So, you know, maybe I'll find something in all these notes that you all can relate to. Last question to ask. Does the Lord want me to do it? Doesn't that hurt? Yeah. Is it God's will for me to do it? throw out another gem. Ian Thomas, Major Ian Thomas, wrote, "It is not the nature of an activity that determines its spirituality, but its origin. It is not the nature of an activity that determines its spirituality, but its origin." You know, sometimes we'd be better off in the out on the creek bank with a fella than we would be other places. And you wouldn't think that being in the creek bank was very spiritual, would you? Let me give you an example. Not this past summer, but summer before last, we rented a condominium out for 4 or 5 months out at a country club, a resort community. And what we did was, I have a friend at home who runs with me some, and he and I got to playing golf. I hadn't played golf in 15 years. I quit because I got to where I could throw my driver further than I could hit the ball. And I made a terrible example out of myself in a tournament with a club throwing, screaming, storming fit, so I quit playing golf. Well, my wife decided thought that I was mature enough to go back and play golf again. So what I did was I built into my program a situation where I couldn't throw any screaming fits. So I took a younger Christian that I worked with me to play golf every time I went, so I wouldn't set a bad example in front of him. I knew I wasn't going to. So I created for me an environment where I was not going to throw a fit. I don't have anything I shouldn't say. I don't know whether any of you guys can relate to that or not, since you all are saints. But anyway, what we did was, though, we decided, Reed, his name is Reed Schnornberg, he's a pharmacist, and old Reed and I decided, if we're going to be out there playing golf, why don't we make this into a spiritual activity? Now, we did not try to deduct it off our income tax. Here's what we did. Every week when we would start to play golf, we would try to find us a Christian who was struggling, a guy that we know that knew Jesus, but he just really wasn't all he wanted to be or all that he could be. So we'd put him in the foursome. And then we'd go out and see if we couldn't find us a heathen, an old boy doesn't know Christ, and put him in there with us. Now let me tell you something, folks. You can put a guy in a golf cart, out in the middle of a golf course, and you get the opportunity to talk to him about Christ. Sometime, if you're looking for the opportunity, you get the opportunity. You don't have to beat him over the head with 4 spiritual laws. You just start laying it in just a little at a time. Interesting thing happened to us out that condo. People who would not talk to us in Marietta on Main Street began to knock on the door to ask to talk to us about the things that were going on in their life. Isn't that interesting? It is not the nature of an activity that determines your spirituality, but its origin. There's only one place better to talk to a guy about Jesus than in a golf course that I can think of, outside of the normal courses. You take a guy out in the middle of Lake Texoma fishing and you want to talk to him about Jesus, he hadn't got any choice but to listen. We've done that too, by the way. Well, okay. Let's talk about the $25,000 principle. Ivy Lee was a consultant. And if you know anything about a consultant, they always know more about your business than you do. That's basically the principle. He went into Charles Schwab, who was at that time the president of Bethlehem Steel. Now this happened, I can't document this exactly, but it had to be 50 years ago. Charles Schwab was the president of Bethlehem Steel. Ivy Lee comes in and he says, I have something for you, a service, that I know will help you manage better. And Charles Schwab said, basically, our problem is not knowing what to do. It is getting us pepped up and motivated to do what we already know to do. That's about half our problem, isn't it? Okay, what he did was, Ivy Lee took out of his pocket a piece of paper and he slid it across, and I can, in my mind's eye, can see this big desk that Charles Schwab is sitting behind. He slides in this paper across there and he says, well, do something for me. Write down on the piece of paper the six most important tasks that you must finish tomorrow. Simple. Charles Schwab did that. Ivy Lee then told him, said, now give them priority. write down and number the first most important thing that you have to do tomorrow. Then the second, and then the third. Put the piece of paper in your pocket when you get up in the morning. Read what you said was priority for the day. Then he told him another thing I think was very interesting. He said, when you go to work in the morning, do what is first priority and finish it before you do anything else. He says, then move on to your second top priority assignment. If you finish it, move on to the third. Then he said, to Schwab, he says, if this is any value to you, try it a week, then allow some of your men to use the same principle. And if, after you've used it, you send me whatever you think my time has been worth with you. Now remember, this is 50 years ago, as far as I can tell. And about a month later, Ivy Lee got a check for $25,000 without ever sending a bill from Charles Schwab. Now let me tell you something. If that principle is good enough for somebody to voluntarily give him $25,000 for, and I have every reason to believe that that story is true, it ought to be good enough for us. And I have a little card that I carry in my pocket, in which I do every day try to prioritize, try to write down what I need to accomplish that day, and then I give it priority, and I try to use it. I realize, of course, that there will be changes, and there will be interruptions. That's part of what you're having to learn to deal with. But at least you've got a plan. You see, if you had six or seven things you were going to do, and you only got through three of them, chances are you'd never gotten through those three anyway if you hadn't had priority, right? And the other thing is that it probably wouldn't have been your top priority thing you accomplished. Right? Yeah, that's true. I have found that there are a lot of people that are very generous with my time. Right? Okay, let me give you another gem. Now, this is basically works best, I think, for people who are active in their church. Every time I hear somebody say, I don't have time, you ask them to do something and they say, I don't have time, what do you know about them? First of all, they're lying to you. They do have time. The thing is, it doesn't have priority, right? When I am asked to do something and I don't want to do it, I never say, I don't have time. The best answer is, no, I don't want to do it because it does not fit my goals. Now, let me tell you something. I can argue with you about your time and whether or not you have time. Can you argue with me about whether or not something fits my goals? Huh. That takes the pressure off. I'll give you an example. I happen to be a member of a wonderful church with a lot of super people. And in our little old town of 2,500, we have two mutes, two deaf mutes. Everybody knows them. I know them very well. And in our church, we had some very well-meaning people who organized a sign language class. And the old boy walks up to me, and he says, Willis, are you going to be a part of the sign language class? And I said, no, I'm not. Why not? I said, well, you've already got eight. And if eight of you can't win two to the Lord or minister to them, what in the world do you need a ninth for? And then I thought, before I really said the wrong thing, and I said, no, really, it does not fit my goals. Now, that one right there, I think, should be worth a lot to you. Never say you do not have time. Say it doesn't fit your goals. Have them well enough, written well enough that you know what it is. Thank you. Incidentally, let me run through some real quick little things, and I'm going to let you do a little work. spreading your time out. Did you know that you can eat an elephant a bite at a time? You can. Divide projects up into bite-sized pieces, and then that way you can accomplish things. See, most of the time we look at something and it's too big for us, so we never start it. It's real important. And it fits our goals and objectives. But we won't. But we keep looking at it, and it is so big. That's like working on your income tax, you know, or some biggie like that. If you be decisive, find an easier way to do things, build in pressure deadlines. Interestingly enough, when I first did this thing, this is kind of a strange example, but when I first did preparing this, I have a tendency, or I had a tendency back then, much worse than I do today, of putting things off. So what I did was, I knew I was going to fly out on Friday morning to go give this Goals, Priorities, Use of Time workshop for the first time. So what I did was, I scheduled a opportunity for me to give it to a bunch of my friends at the church on Tuesday night. Now what I knew was, I knew that if I did that, I had to have that thing ready Tuesday night, and then I could fine-tune it Wednesday and Thursday. Plan into your life some situations, some pressure points, some deadlines. Put yourself under the gun. Make yourself do it. Flip over just a minute. If you can't get everything done, you're either doing the wrong things. Let me state it again. If you can't get everything done, you're either doing the wrong things or you're doing the right things the wrong way. Examine what you're doing. Look at what you're doing, how you're doing it. See, that goes back to the principle that God gives us just enough time to do what He wants us to do. And that is true. The problem is we get sidelined doing the wrong things. Don't major on the minors. How to plan quickly. How do you go about planning? First of all, pray. Appropriate God's wisdom. This is not in the handout, I'm sure. Appropriate God's wisdom. Two, establish goals. Determine what should be accomplished. Three, program. Determine how the objective should be accomplished. Four, schedule. Determine the when an activity ought to be done. Five, budget. That has to do with determining how much money, time, and manpower ought to be applied. You want me to run through them again? Okay. First one, pray. Number two, establish goals. You know, ask God to give you a clear picture of what it is He wants you to do, and establish your goals based on what on your prayer life. Then program. That determines the how an objective will be reached. Four is schedule, and that has to do with the when. Determine when each activity ought to be done. Five has to do with budget, and there we're talking about allocating time, money, and resources to it. Just to briefly summarize, time is a precious commodity entrusted to us by God for accomplishing His task during these short years we've got on earth. Use it wisely. Set goals, establish priority, and allocate your time. Okay. Do you have any questions?